Thank you, everyone, for reading. Introduce this, number eight, introduce the speaker or the person who is to introduce the speaker. My home group is Easy 123 Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Duluth, Georgia. And once a year, there's a Sunday morning men's meeting. It's really a spiritual thing. Some of my heroes are in there. Lots and lots of sobriety. And they sponsor an event in Toccoa, a men's spiritual retreat on the weekend. It's around, I think, May? Anyway. But I heard tonight's guest speaker, I heard him speak there. And I really enjoyed what he had to say. I don't want to take any more time. He can tell his story a lot better than I can. So I give you tonight's speaker, Michael R.
I saw him in the suit jacket when I showed up, and I thought, oh, man, did I undress, like, not dress properly? So, I might walk away from this microphone a bit, but I'm a high school teacher, so I'm used to yelling at people at a distance. I'm Mike Riley. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 9th, 1988. So, yeah, it's a good year. So, yeah, sobriety is pretty cool. So what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Of course, I have to give credit to the man in the Michigan jacket up front, graduate school 1998. Way to go. What it was like, so I grew up in North Jersey, so if I drop an F-bomb once in a while, I'm sorry for that too. I was one of five boys of a very nice conservative Catholic family. I was number two of five, which that's probably a sign of something too, to be number two. I went to Catholic school. I wore a suit for 12 years of my education. And it was a decent family. There was nothing wrong. I had pretty much anything I wanted. You know, there was no struggle really. Other than the norms, you know. I wasn't the most athletic, you know. My brothers, we all got trophies. My mother loved these statuettes. So my older brother, he got the football player, and one of my younger brothers got a basketball player, and another one got a soccer player, and I got the scholar. Nobody wants to be the scholar. This is before PCs were invented. So geekdom wasn't cool yet, but I was a scholar, and so, you know, already that's like, I'm not the cool one, right? And so accelerate to just jump up to where the real fun stuff happened. At the age of 12, I discovered booze. I was at my friend Matt's basement, and we were doing a sleepover, and Matt had like seven brothers. Boy, the Catholics just can't stop. And he said, my older brother showed me this drink called a screwdriver. It's like, oh, what's that? Also, some orange juice and vodka. Okay. So we had a nice orange juice and vodka. And we pounded it, you know, in that nice burn. And of course, what are the first words out of a true alcoholic's mouth after that? This is awesome, followed by, can we have another? So to this day, I can say I've never had one. Never had one. Thank you, Matt, for setting me off on a course. The burn was awesome. The feeling was awesome. The freedom. I'm not stressed. I'm not worried about a thing. I mean, I'm a kid. I'm freaking 12 years old. What do I have to be stressed about? But I felt relaxed. I felt relaxed. So I accelerated really quickly. Really soon thereafter, I would skim off the top of the cabinet, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, you know, what we would call jungle juice, top with a little bit of Kool-Aid or maybe some 7-Up, and I would get on my bike by myself to go into the woods to drink alone. And I would sit on this rock in a swamp, and I thought I was like the Marlboro Man overlooking the Grand Canyon, of course, but I was a kid drinking alone in the woods at the age of 12. And thank God for that story, because that's one of the stories that keeps me here. Because I also have a lot of stories that make me think maybe I shouldn't be here. My 12-year-old drinking accelerated pretty quickly. whenever I could. I discovered blacking out at the age of 15 or 16. And I discovered my love for blacking out at the age of 15 or 16. I still remember some kind of party where there was Carling Black Label. I only did top shelf stuff. And I don't remember coming home. And I don't remember the rest of the night. But I do remember my father in the morning asking me why there was vomit down the side of the house. And he let me spray it off, of course. I thought, oh, it must have been the bologna sandwiches, Dad. It must have been the bologna sandwiches. So the lies start young too, right? It wasn't it. That wasn't the drinking. It wasn't me. I can't have a problem. All the kids are doing it. Just two beers. You're right. So I found my place. Now, I am a son of an alcoholic. Sometimes he's an alcoholic. At the time, he was an alcoholic. So I also use that to rationalize. I use that to say, well, I'm supposed to be this way. They say you're just like your dad. You're just like your dad. You're just like your dad. Ksht, awesome. I've got permission. I've got genetic rationalization to do stuff like this. So I would grab whatever drinking I could grab. I did pretty good in high school. I graduated pretty close to the top of my class. I was the scholar. I didn't do much else. I hung out at parties whenever I could. My brothers didn't really want to socialize with me because I would do the stupid things. I would sit on top of the keg and just drink one for everybody else who was drinking one. I'd play quarters and I'd pick myself. So, come on, you know you wanted that drink. So I graduated high school. And I've picked three colleges to apply to. You know, they told me, hey, go to a small school, you'll get great attention. By the way, that's a lie. I'm a high school teacher. And so I went to one of these colleges in Pennsylvania, Muhlenberg College in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And boy, oh boy, that started off really well. I had no idea what fraternities were. I didn't join one, but I knew there were lots of beers there. And as soon as I got there, the first day, my roommate lined up his bongs on a shelf. Now, I had smoked before. I found something on the side of the street, and my friend said, I think it's pot, so of course I smoked it. That's the thinking we have, right? I found it on the street, so I'll smoke it. I know, I walk my dog a lot. That's on the street, too. We smoked it and smoked it until I felt something. I think I was just asphyxiated. I don't think I was actually stoned. But whatever. I thought it was a high. And so I got to college, and I was familiar with it, but it wasn't my thing. You know, I was a drunk. I liked drinking. And so we got there, and that kid's name was Ben. And Ben's like, dude, do you smoke? I was like, well, you know, if it's lying around, I guess. You know, my drinking inspired me to try other things. Drugs. Things with other people, things in situations. So, yeah, drinking was a gateway drug to a lot of stupid. And so I didn't really dig the pot so much, but when I saw how much Ben spent on it, and I was a business major, I know how I can afford a full fridge of Budweiser and cheesesteaks galore and having parties. So I became the largest retailer on campus. I had a good time. After a couple months, I was selling lots and lots of pot. We would buy it from New Jersey and bring it to Pennsylvania. And it only took me till December to find out from the FBI that that's illegal. I also found out you probably shouldn't prepackage it into like samples that people would buy. They call that possession with intent to distribute. So it really was December of my first year of college that I was arrested on 20 years for felony interstate trafficking and possession with intent to distribute. I really didn't like the stuff. I just liked making money. Now, the FBI was very complimentary. They said I kept the best records of anybody they'd ever seen. I had a nickname for everybody. If you came in with your dog, you were a boy and his dog. That's what your name. I don't want to know your name. So I had a pretty good memory. I have a pretty good knack for numbers. Luckily for my memory, the police said, we know you're just some scared 18-year-old kid. Where do you get it from? Well, 1433rd Street, officer. And so they said, thanks, that's the address we were looking for. You are not allowed in the state of Pennsylvania for 7 years till the statute of limitation runs out. So I got out of a 20-year felony. Whew. So, you know, I go back home, ruined that little first semester of college. That wasn't very good. And my parents said, you can go home to school for a while. You can stay local to a local university, but you're also going to go see a therapist. So I learned to lie to a therapist for a year. He tried. I'm sure he meant well, but I didn't mean well. I didn't want to get well. I did something stupid. I'm a party guy. I'm young. So after playing good boy for about a year, you know, I'd still drink here and there. My parents made me go to my first AA meeting when I was 18, and I was a preppy kid, and all of those kids were long-haired burnouts, and so I didn't belong. You know, they're not wearing the pink eyes odd. I mean, this is the 80s, and that was my thing, but it wasn't their thing, and it's like, no, I didn't identify. I was very superficial. So I earned my right to go back to away to college after a year at home. And so what makes sense for me is to find the state with the lowest drinking age, which was Vermont. And I went to St. Michael's College in Vermont, and I picked St. Michael's because my name's Michael. And it had an 18-year-old drinking age. So I showed up in Burlington, Vermont in, forget about the year, but January, like 85. Blackout the first night. There's a sign. They didn't tell me that when we went to Canada to get beers from Canada, that they're twice as strong as the beers in the United States. Molson Brewers were my new best friend, and we did a lot of damage. And for a week after, they called me Ted. And I don't know why, but I found out later that in a blackout, I told them my name was Theodore. After 2 weeks, we were evicted from this dorm because we had caused enough damage through these parties, through these blackouts. I had found out that a lot of people go to Vermont because of the drinking age and its proximity to Canada and the $200 a year ski pass. So a lot of us were taking classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays and getting shit-faced drunk 5 days a week. And I knew, I found my place. These are my peeps. I just wanted to blackout. I wanted to be at this place of numb. Going back to the acceleration, it was 1 year in, and I was threatened to get thrown out of that school too. So, okay, two schools asking me to leave, probably not so good. Logically, one of the other things that kind of kicked in for me, besides my being a 12-year-old drinking alone, St. Patrick's Day. My full name is Michael Patrick Sean Riley. You'd assume on St. Patrick's Day I'd be kind of social. I found it very intrusive to have so many people online on St. Patrick's Day. It takes a long time to get a drink on St. Patrick's Day. It's much more expensive on St. Patrick's Day to go to a bar. So I got a bottle of whiskey and sat in my room by myself, because I could get much drunker, much more efficiently and cheaper that way. So I chose to start drinking alone, or maybe with one or two others. I started trading my stuff for a bottle. I traded a bass guitar for a half gallon of vodka. I traded a chess set for a six pack of beer. I'm just, whatever I can, at 2 a.m, I'm scraping cigarette butts out of the ashtray because I don't have the money to get more, but this one's got a half inch on it. How disgusting is that? So I said, okay, maybe there's some evidence. And so I decided to go, well, didn't decide to go. I agreed to go to a rehab in North Jersey in that summer. And being a student, I like school. And so I thought, this is a cool, nice, kind of cool school. And so I went to this school and I learned lots. Now, I was pretty young at the time. I was 19-ish at the time, and I was probably one of the only teens or younger there. My roommate, we called him Colonel Crack. He was a professor at a local university. I got along there well with most of those folks because I was there to learn. I actually liked people older than me. Usually I didn't have great social skills with people my age. So I did a 30-day stay. I got out and I did what I was told. I had a person back in Vermont, a counselor, and he was the beginning of pretty much that third step thing in my life. Find somebody you can trust and do what they say. So this guy's name's Dave, and he said you should try this rehab. And so I did the rehab. And so then I got out of that rehab, and I went to meetings, and I did my 90 and 90. Now, the scary thing for me, 90 and 90, then was going back to college. And drinking still existed at college. And that was hard. That's really hard. Now I know there's drinking everywhere. I was the captain of the drinking team. You know, when they said, let's drink 100 drinks in a weekend, I said, let's make it 2. But I started to get through it. I was going to meetings on campus every day for a while. And then 5 days a week. And you can understand the progression. Then 3 days a week, then 2 days a week, and one. And then maybe I didn't go anymore. And I started taking a job, right? And so I took a job as managing a restaurant because I needed to make money. I was paying for my own college. My parents could not afford it. So I was managing a French restaurant for my last couple years of college. So I didn't go to meetings anymore. And I started getting antsy and started getting angry and aggravated. And then I started putting some Angostura bitters in my Coke. So it's a nice flavor. I put a lot of it in my Coke. It's a nice flavor. I never read the label that Angostura bitters was 45%. I didn't know it was booze. But that was the beginning of that lighting of that fuse. I was smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day. You're required to get at least a 2.0 to graduate college, for the most part. I got a 2.08. I spent $50,000 to graduate by 0.08 of a point. And to even do that, I had to beg for them to recognize an AP class that I had taken in like 1983. So I pissed away 50 grand at a nice college party in Vermont. I was unemployable. I had been sober for 2 years. I wasn't doing what I was told anymore. I had some issues that drove me crazy emotionally. I had a girlfriend slash fiance, not sure really what that was at the time, where she said she was with child. I also found out she was with others. That wasn't very good. I actually went down to Boston. I had about 2 years sobriety, and I went down to Boston to drink with a friend. I said, screw it, screw it. And we went to a bar, and I put a drink right in front of me, and I couldn't do it. Let's go to another bar. This place doesn't feel right. Went to another bar, put a drink in front of me, I couldn't do it. Screw this, let's go home. I drink well at home. Let's get a case of beer and go back to your apartment. Got a case of beer, I couldn't do it. So this program has freaking ruined my drinking. Asshole. But about 2 weeks later, when the owner of the French restaurant decided to quit and go back to France, and he gave us the bar to bring home. So I had a car filled with booze, literally filled with booze. And I lived with these guys, and they're cracking it open, like this top-notch vodka, top-notch whiskey. Don't you want any? No, 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 I can't, I can't, I can't. And then they said, have you ever tried nitrous oxide? Have you ever done whippets? No, that's not alcohol. Idiot. I inhaled nitrous oxide for about a half hour. Nitrous oxide was my relapse. And I didn't do well. That began a 4-day blackout. There's supposedly some videotape of this. We had these two girl neighbors. I borrowed their camera. I remember this coming out from a blackout, and I'm in a bathroom with a video camera. Kind of weird, but there's a videotape somewhere. I'd love to see it. But I can tell you, after 4 days, I woke up. And another one of my moments that helps me a lot where I woke up in the gutter in front of my house, in my own puke. That's got to be a bottom, right? Not even making it to your house that's like 10 feet away, in the literal gutter, in your own vomit. So that's when I flipped a coin. Do I kill myself or do I try and get sober again? I literally said it's a 2 out of 3 thing. I literally flipped a coin. Kind of turned out well. I was in Vermont and I said, okay, well, what worked? What worked is when I was in North Jersey after I got out of rehab and I went back to the same meetings where this guy, Big Al, was still making coffee. And this guy, Greg, who was my initial contact sponsor, was my sponsor again. Did I have to go back to New Jersey? No, I know I don't have to do that now, but that's what I needed then. You know, my mom said, okay, you can stay here if you go to meetings. So I'm 22, 23, and that's when I picked it up again. And I did what they told me. And I got a sponsor. I got that guy, Greg, to be a sponsor. I picked up somebody to trust. Because they tell you a lot about higher powers and prayer, but I am a conniving bastard, and I don't believe the answers I hear in my head. I'm a liar. And I can pray and hope and think, and I'll tell myself, yes, that's what God wants you to do. But I really need you people to filter that for me, because I will lie to myself and convince myself of things that aren't actually what I really need. So going back to that was awesome. Making coffee again on Tuesdays and Friday nights was awesome. Doing the 1990s, doing the service work was awesome. And that has accelerated as well. I was there back in Jersey for about 5 years. I was pretty unemployable. I saw this job posting for, so I was going to be on Wall Street, right? Big Wall Street thing. Well, that was, I graduated 87, 88. It was a nice stock market crash around then. Didn't really help your job opportunities. And so with my business degree with a 2.08 GPA, I saw this ad for a person who's good at math and softball, wanted for violent teenager teacher assistant. That's exactly what I want. My job was to protect this lady and tackle kids who went after her and help them with math. It was so cool. There was another guy. There was actually two of us. We were like bouncers. It was great. And so, but this was my first sober job, and it was so refreshing for me to be of service to these other kids. I still remember these kids' names. And folks, this is 1988, and I can tell you that Keith and Hector and Ken, Ed, all of them, I got to understand service. I got to understand trying to love people for the sake of loving them, for nothing for me. It was so awesome. I don't know how many people you remember 30 years since, but man, it's like I could touch them. So that inspired me to do this education thing. It changed my life towards teaching. And so I spent about 4 or 5 years doing that. And I got the opportunity to do some things. I opened up a franchise for this company in Vermont. Then they asked me to open one up in Seoul, Korea. And so I got to like be trusted to do things like travel and take responsibility for initiating things. Gifts of the program. One of my favorite places to drink was airports and hotels. You know, there's nobody seeing you at hotels and airports, right? There's nobody that's going to mark down what you did. I was trustworthy. I was trustworthy. Why? Because I was doing the things I was supposed to do. After 5 years, I moved to the University of Michigan's campus in Ann Arbor to do this SAT company thing. They asked me to start that franchise. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to go back to school because I like school. I think I can do it right this time. So they saw my GPA, and they gave me a trial. They said, if you take 1 year of classes, and I could probably do like an accelerated-ish math degree, not a full degree, but they said, if you do well with those, then we'll let you into our grad school. Well, I got a 4.0 on that. They let me into their grad school. I got a 4.0 on that. Once again, because I'm going to meetings, I'm sponsoring people, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, but now these life benefits are helping me understand, oh my God, sobriety is worth it. All of these gifts are coming because of that. One opportunity I had when I was there was working at the Alcohol Research Center doing surveys. They're kind of a scam. They really just go to VAs and ask college girls what they think. So it's like old veterans and college girls. That's what's the psyche of the United States right now in most psychological profiles. You gotta love going to the VA and asking guys their sex history. It's more fun with the college girls. That's when my sobriety hit a dangerous spot. I worked with this guy, Dr. Zuckerberg, and he was like one of the specialists in alcohol research in the country. And he said, actually, there's this one type of alcoholism that's primarily the ages of 17 to 23. And after that, it goes away. Shit. That's my range. I got sober at 23. I thought about it. At the same time, my dad said, I'm not an alcoholic anymore. I realized I can control it. Like, oh, shit. Now my genetic excuse is gone. Scientists tell me that I might not be. My dad tells me, yeah, you might not be. Since then, I've kind of leveraged a guess. This sobriety thing, maybe I'm wrong. But I'm okay to be wrong on that. Since my Michigan days, I went on to come back, did some teaching in the D.C. area. I decided to leave that and do the corporate thing for a while with a company called Accenture. Paid way too much to fly around the country as a really high-paid temp. That was cool. Got a wife out of the deal. Awesome, awesome lady. She does all these triathlons and stuff. She's got her degree from Harvard. What the heck is she doing with me? She's 11 years younger, thank God. That's worked out. We're in year 18. We're good. So I earned the trust of my in-laws. That was hard too, by the way, because I'm like this guy who grew up Catholic down the street from a seminary, and they're the most Jewish family in the world. They were not a fan of this goy boy toy taking their daughter. But I earned their trust. I went on to going back to the teaching thing, because you know that consulting stuff was fun and the money was good, but I found my soul in serving others with teaching. So I need a job that's of service. I can't do the job that's that consulting thing. That's not for me. I need to actually be of service all the time because I'm a very selfish jerk and I need to feel helping others all the time. And that's a big part of my sobriety. I like beginners meetings a whole lot more than this kind of thing. This kind of thing's cool. I like beginners meetings a whole lot more than sitting around at our Sunday morning meeting. He can tell you one of the rooms, the average time in the room is probably 20 years. It's nice, but man, there's something about that 30 days, that 60 days. For those of you who are on that, God bless you. That's awesome. So more recently, I've been to the White House to talk about education. I got to work with the Minecraft Programming Committee at the White House. That's a pretty darn cool thing. I've been an advisor to the governor of this state on computer science issues and passed some laws about that kind of thing. I literally have written my own job description. The superintendent of my county in Gwinnett said, you've done some great things. What do you want to do? I don't know. I want to teach 3 hours a day and then do something cool for the rest of the day. Okay. Imagine that. A drunk who used to want to drink 100 drinks a day, what would you like to do? Write your contract, go. So another blessing of the program. I have two kids. I have, didn't see that coming. My 14-year-old son is a ninth grader in the classroom across the hall from me, in the program that I started. I started this STEM program in the state. He gives me hugs publicly in the cafeteria and doesn't ask for money either. My daughter, brilliant, wonderful young lady. The state of Georgia just released the average ACT score. The average ACT in the state of Georgia is like 19. In Gwinnett County, it's 20. My daughter at 11 years old got a 23. She's freaking brilliant. I've been present for her. I've been a dad for her. Being a teacher has allowed me to drive her to swim team. Going to meetings I can go to at night after she's there, or I can hit a noon meeting and be there for her events, for gymnastics, for a swim, for academics. My kids love me and I love them. What amazing gifts of this program. That scientific study that says I might not have been an alcoholic at the age of 23, they don't know the blessings I have about a wife and children who have never seen me drunk. My wife met me when I had 10 years sober. My kids have kind of seen me at the 15 to 20 years sober range. Now, is my sobriety perfect? No. Right now, in today's day and age, right now, I wish I went to more meetings right now. Seasonally, the beginning of the school year kicks my butt. I will go down to one meeting a week, no problem, for like the first 2 months, and then I start to get antsy and crazy. Also, being a teacher doesn't really help me sponsor people so well because I'm not reachable by phone for a good chunk of the day, and that bothers me. So I'm trying to fix that. That's a flaw in my program right now. So I'm going to beginners meetings on Tuesday nights, and that's where I can be of service. I'm trying to go to these meetings on noons because it's 5 minutes down the road. At least I can talk to somebody, and then I got to go back to work before they see that I'm missing. So I'm trying to work on that. I'm trying to work on still being honest. There's a white liar inside me all the time, and white lies are my gauge of my initial sobriety not being so hot. Any mistruth, any fallacy, why'd you say that? Because if we're not ready to be completely honest in this program, I'm not sure if we're going to stay sober, at least for me. I can't tell you enough of the blessings. I can't tell you enough of the... There's plenty more stories that I've done a lot this stupid, and I hope I can always empathize with especially the beginner. For what the future holds, I don't know. I would say now, for those of us with some time, what I've seen especially is the responsibility to the program. One thing I'm working on now is when somebody starts to ramble off in a meeting and they're going off on their 6th, 7th, 8th, 10th minute or something, it's my responsibility to say, hey, shut up. I didn't know that's my place because I still feel like I'm 12. I didn't know that I'm 53 and I'm supposed to be like the responsible grown-up in the room. But that is my place now. But it's also my place to reach out to the beginner. It's my place to defend the program. It's my place to represent the program. I've also tried to just be much more public, not promotional, but let my neighbors know. Let my friends know. I don't care. I got 30 freaking years. If they know that I'm in AA, what's the big deal? At least if they know I'm in recovery. I don't want to hide it. I want to be available. And that's where the neighbors do come out, or at least the spouse of the neighbor. Hi, I heard this about you. Can you talk to me? I've had to bury a brother-in-law who didn't get it. There's other issues. You know, I know there's other people suffering from other things in this room. I have a nephew just really hit the skids with schizophrenia lately. But that's all related to our genetic path. You know, the genes are all tied together with what we do here. So what can I do there? I can listen. I can listen to my brother. I can listen to my sister-in-law. It's a wonderful thing to have these scars, right? We do not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. In fact, forget about shutting the door on it. Maybe open the door to it. Let everybody see what's in my closet. So it's been a pleasure for me to talk to you folks tonight. It's truly a gift. My wife's like, you're driving a freaking hour to go tell us something? It's a treat. It's a gift. And I truly thank you for being here, and thank you for being in the program and help some beginners out there. Cool? Bye.
Mike, I want to thank you for coming out here. I have a gift that I want to give to you. I went all the way to Whole Foods to get the special packaging for this. So, just a little something from the Ridgeview Alumni Association. Say thank you for coming out here tonight. So, yeah. so much for that.
Oh, it's fragile. Fragile. Ah. Awesome. Wow. Wow, that's really cool. Somebody here make this?
Thank you. That's a little thing Drew put together. So anyway, thank you, Marcos. Really enjoyed your story.